Yes, we know everything by word, and that's our problem. We think in words as if they are not there, as if we think, as if it is we open to the divine grace is a word, but it works, yes? And the wonder of it that we don't notice that it is by word that we do it, and then we can use the word. It's a device. You remember in Matrix there is a beautiful scene when the Neo is trapped in that in between worlds, in between Matrix and machine world, and that girl, little girl, the last exile, comes to him, and he meets her parents, father and mother, and he says, "You see, I am in love." He says, "Machines are in love. You are a machine." He says, "Yes, but love is the word." And I thought, what? Is it possible that it goes so far that even there it has a meaning? It might be. It's not only about human beings, it's about all beings. So we had today to look into this major difficult topic, but very interesting, and just to make a general overview of this theory of Sporta. And Sporta is, as you see written there, Sporta, the disclosure of meaning. So the disclosure of meaning happens on all the levels of the structure of the speech, starting from phonetic disclosure as cognizable articulated sound. Then it moves into the domain of morphology, where we recognize the word, the root, all those elements which build up and connect this word into the syntactic structure, and then we move into the text, to the word, to the bigger sentence, where the meaning is disclosed in sentence and text as such, in a bigger context. Now, if it is not related to the bigger context which is implied, the meaning will be also not understood. Have you noticed this many times when you come into somebody's context and you listen to somebody's speech even, and you do not know what it is all about because you are not in their context? It happens very often. You hear many sentences. You understand what the person says, but you do not know what for he says all that. You haven't been at the beginning where the context was laid out, and the bigger picture you don't see, that's why you do not understand what they are saying. Though you understand every word, every sentence, but you do not understand the meaning of them, what they mean by that. And this is the biggest problem for the language. Well, this is the meaning, how meaning is being disclosed in the wider context and then narrowed down to the more immediate context, to the word and the phoneme. But what I wanted to say is another thought, which is quite interesting, that I lost it, it will come. It was just shadow of that thought in that Sporta arrangement. It was already knocking into my doors, and I said, "You just wait a bit." And then it withdrew. It didn't want to come in. That's what happens sometimes when you are building up the context in which we are to think these things. So this general overview of this disclosure of meaning is very useful as a one exercise, one time exercise, to see how the meaning is revealed on all levels of our consciousness and structure. So how consciousness perceives every smallest and the biggest meaning, and how they are all united. Yes, what was knocking into my door, if that higher context, that bigger implied context is not there, then the whole text would not have meaning. So there are, so to say, hidden structures, hidden syntactic and semantic structures about which Chomsky is speaking and starting to evolve the whole other paradigm of thinking about linguistics, that what we say is only on the surface, but there are so many things are implied there that we could lost ourselves there. And we were using this examples of some teacher comes into the classroom and says, Nishtha will go to Moscow, or Nishtha will go to Pondicherry. What does he really say? Does he say that Nishtha will go to Pondicherry? No, he says so many more things, and you can trace them immediately. So in that presumption of that statement, there's so much more. There is that there was a discussion going on who will go to Pondicherry. And the decision was made that Nishtha will go to Pondicherry and not somebody else. All these meanings are implied. So every positive statement means that there was a need or a call or an environment for it to appear. There was a context built up before that meaning came or that word came. So I want to look into this major structure of theory of spot. There are different approaches to this theory, and we have to go through it once in order to show the richness and precision of these topics being discussed among ancient and medieval grammarians of India. These are spread out in many different writings in the range of 2,000 years. There are eight major approaches to the theory of Sphota. There is Varna Sphota, the disclosure on the level of the sound, morpheme, phoneme. Pada Sphota, the word, recognition of the word. Vakya Sphota, the recognition of the sentence, text. And I told you last time that when I was in Korea, it took me 6 months to distinguish Pada Sphota, that I would hear that these are words. First I had to learn sounds, I had to be familiar with those flows of sounds. Then I distinguished that between those sounds there are formations which are words, and then you could hear some kind of sentences. So Akhanda Pada Sphota, Akhanda Vakya Sphota, Varna Jati Sphota, Pada Jati Sphota, and Vakya Jati Sphota. We will go one by one, and we will see how they build up this perception. Here's a brief outline. Varna Sphota is defined as denotative vachaka when a single phoneme or a stem or affix is found to be so. And therefore, the Varna Sphota is taking place. Now, if I use, for example, sound A, not in the speech context, and it is cognized not as an articulation of some prefix or suffix or whatever, then it is not cognized as Varna Sphota. It's just a sound, a noise. But if it is cognized as such, which is expressing certain meaning within the language framework in which we think, then it is Varna Sphota. Otherwise, it's just sound. So the difference between normal sound and articulated meaningful sound would be of that kind, where the affix or stem or anything in the language is found to be so. And therefore, the Varna Sphota is taking place. This theory utilizes the analysis from bottom to top, which is mainly found in grammatical treatises such as Pāṇini Descriptive Grammar. Any grammar is dealing in the same way. We learn alphabet, then we see what affixes, suffixes, prefixes, stems we can build, and then we build up. So we are coming from, so to say, bottom to top, yes? From the elements, from the atoms to the bigger picture of the text. Varnaspota has its own difficulties in the immediate application to the analysis of the word, especially when the synthetic forms of the word are examined, such as ghatena, yes, with the pot, for it cannot clearly define them into separate and meaningful units. You cannot say that where is here even suffix, it's difficult to define, where the stem ends and suffix begins in this word. Is it ena, ina, or na? It's impossible to define. In this particular approach of mental chopping into the pieces. Am I clear with this? Is it clear? Or it's too much, too far away? It is a clear example of how grammatical analysis is incapable to find out the meaning of grammatical units. It breaks down the oneness of this system of etymons into bits and pieces, demanding from every bit to be meaningful in itself without referring to its system of meaning.
which part of that word is part and which part is bit?
Yeah, it would help become the wrong to know what the word for pot is.
Ghata is a pot, ghatena with a pot. Now, the suffix is not clear. We have saha, tena, ghataha, ghatena. So it is not built on the presumption that every bit has to be clearly defined and joined clearly to the, because it's a synthetic language. It's not a agglutinative type as in Tamil. In Tamil you have clearly defined suffixes. They will not mix. They are kept separate. So it's another way of thinking.
Latin also
is synthetic. It is also mixing like Sanskrit or Greek. Sanskrit also has tendencies of not agglutination, but analytic type of languages. So it has a tendency. You can speak analytically, but mainly it is synthetic type. So all these flexemas are taking place. Come and came is a flexema. You would not distinguish it. Why it says that it is past tense, nobody knows. Where is that meaningful change? Nobody can figure out. Come and came. Why came is a past tense? We have no idea. So we cannot distinguish out of this word separate meaningful unit which will show us, as Padaspota, as Varnaspota should, that this is, by this we have this meaning. Even grammatically, it's impossible. It's difficult. But what I would like to dwell on here a little longer, if you don't mind, because if it is a serious, a deep question, then there is a wrong approach to it altogether. The wrong approach is here because there is a hierarchy in the word structure. So the first root, which is sounding, is to take most on its meaning. And the relation of this root to other words will be secondary. It is kind of blended into it at the end, and there is the ending, which is also showing the relation of this particular meaning to other structure. It is not on the same level as the root. The meaning is not on the same level, but it is treated and looked into as if it is on the same level, and then it is said, no, it's not on the same, and we cannot know it in the same way. We can't know it in the same way because there is a hierarchy. The root is first, suffix is second, and ending is last. There are also prefixes, and prefixes have very great power in Sanskrit. Now they are joined. But there was a time when they were free words, and they could stand before the word or even after the word, or even without the verb altogether. So it's not very clear how these prefixes came to be prefixed to this verb. Yes, we have it already in Latin, in Greek, in other languages, Indo-European languages, as fixed. But in the old, ancient Vedic language, they're still free. And that is the only biggest, the greatest, the biggest distinction between agglutinative type and synthetic, is that agglutinative type does not permit prefixation. And you know why? There are no prefixes in Tamil language. You know why? Because then that agglutination will have no meaning. Because the root is to be major meaning, to which you add in the hierarchy different affixes. These affixes will show us the hierarchy of meaning. So if the root is not the major, there is some more major prefix to it, then the whole system collapses. Does it make sense?
And what does it mean for the mentality of the people?
Yes, they think differently. And you can hear this in English language.
And the outcome, maybe?
Oh, there are many outcomes. There are so many funny things between people coming to English language from different backgrounds. I'm coming from Russian syntax, and I have a problem all the time. Rod is here to prove it. So, every time that I put in a different position these words, I'm doing it all the time. And it's because it is in my structure. I'm not out of that structure yet. Though I'm using this language for so long, I'm still embedded in that syntactic structure. And one professor even who was in US for, I don't know, 40 years from Spanish background or something, he said, syntax is never dying in you. It is something which you carry till the end of your life. Once you build it in your childhood, the way of thinking and relating words, it's nearly impossible to change. You may learn other languages, but syntax will always break through this way of thinking and organizing words.
I think this could be also this aspect, no, of sentence and structure could also be influenced, yes, the English language, because also the other meanings from other language nations moves in. And like Shiorbin also used a totally other way of
You know, I was so happy when I read Shakespeare. You know why? Because it was finally synthetic language. And all those things which are prohibited completely in a normal, so to say, Slavic English, were permitted there. And I met them so many and I was so happy. He can omit verbs. He doesn't need auxiliary verbs. He can speak directly. Perseus, the deliverer. You don't need to say Perseus is the deliverer, and it is a sentence in itself. So it's like Slavic language, like synthetic language. Still that background of synthetic thinking is there. Well, I don't want to deviate you too far from this, but
it's
here... Yeah, one has to be within this milieu, yes, English milieu. If I would live somewhere in, I don't know, London for a while or New York, I would pick up that language.
But the opposite, that the meaning goes more in the prefix structure.
Right. And it seems we are picking up only very narrow diapason, how do you call it? Range, very narrow range of language which is related only to this particular studies, because if I go to the to life and see what they are using there in the village, I will not be able to speak. I will have to learn every word, because these words are coming from the childhood and I don't have them.
Because the same how we express it is really common, one can understand now in
even 300 years ago, yes.
Yeah, but is that changed? Like?
But it's also custom, it's politeness and all that things, which also determine the language maybe.
Chomsky has a theory that there are about five fundamental syntactical patterns, just like I was going to mention this tonight anyway, just like there are five fundamental body plans in evolution, there are five, more or less, five fundamental syntactical structures, and when a child is introduced to the language environment, there are genetic switches that are affected by the relationship between the syntactical structure and the actual order of experience in the relationship to parents and environment. And at a very early age, the syntactical pattern is triggered that corresponds to that language environment. So it's a genetically linked system, and that's why it's difficult to change it once the pattern is set in action.
Is it for sure that there is a switch?
This is a pretty well documented biological fact.
Because this would be a revolutionary thing if there is a switch, genetic switch, that means we are different beings. In a way, we.
The potentials are all there initially.
But death is sure, the only thing.
Death is the only thing, sure, but even that, we can negotiate.
There's more and more biological evidence.
It's interesting.
But that also would be
the
time being,
that
it became such a genetic
problem,
and
it
has to be that it's something very old.
Yeah, very old.
I just have a comment about myself being an aberration in that sense, because until the age of 5, I did not hear or speak or understand English. And in fact, my mother taught me to read and write Gujarati, and I was able to do that by the age of 5. And then I went to an English medium school, and from then on, something happened, and by I don't know when I started to think in English, so that I would start switching to English to express myself better. And now, it's the language, it's my first language in a sense. But that childhood memory of that language does not intervene in English.
And you fluent in Tamil?
I don't speak Tamil very well. No, Gujarati is my mother.
You fluent in Gujarati?
So.
It's interesting. Mm-hmm.
There's this switch over with English also. I really feel what you said, why is English also the sort of friend? That's what I selected. No? But I remember also then that there was a hyper the switch where you don't have to think anymore. You know, translate your own tongue into that capacity. Goes, so to say, automatically. What is that? Is that relating to any of this? It has also something to do with all of this.
Yeah, let us see what it does, because we are just at the beginning on the phonetic level. We are not moving anywhere yet. But when we move to the sentence text and wider context and see how they were treated, there will be the whole system of how we cognize the meaning, because it's about the cognition of the meaning, yes? Through articulation. It's not about anything else. It's what is the system or the mechanism of this cognition.
And then also how in one language we have totally, if we take Germany or America also, how many dialects or how many structure in South Germany would be totally different than in North Germany.
Yeah, so every language has a range of dialects by which we recognize where people are coming from. If you take Russian language, it's a huge, you know from what social structure person comes, what is his background, education, you know what town he's coming from, what even part of town. It is all heard immediately. It's expressed in few movements of the thought and body language and articulation. So we all know this. In Italy, the same, most probably in the mountains, you have so many dialects and possibilities. We were on the expedition in Pamir, I remember, and we were studying this Iranian languages, Tajik language, it's Iranian, and every hill was separating another village with another language. So as hills were going, there was another and another and another and another language. And they are all considered to be dialects of one language, Iranian language. But they are far from it in every respect.
And in New Guinea, they have 1,000 different languages.
Where?
In Papua New Guinea. They have distinct languages.
Very small islands.
Papua,
yeah,
they have been named.
Because the ridges and mountains and valleys were so difficult to traverse that each village just created its own language.
Yes,
yeah.
You can joke and say that is the reason why so many is because they are cannibals. So they were fighting for territory, and if somebody spoke wrong language, he would be eaten immediately. Next day, in the village.
Yes, to survive, we had to learn several dialects. Where am I now?
Yes.
To eat or to be eaten? To choose between the two.
So pretense with an evolutionary value, the ability to pretend.
To change your color, a chameleon. I was just now watching, it's funny, but it comes all together as if somebody is organizing it. Have you seen My Fair Lady?
Yeah. Yes.
It's exactly about that.
This is the theme.
Just now, 5 minutes before going here, I was watching how he was...
But in England and America, you can also tell where they come from by the accent of the English. It's so easy to spot where someone comes from.
That's what he was doing as a linguist. He was spotting everybody and telling their history. That's quite interesting.
I can't resist saying this. It was known through linguistic circles in the United States that these people are speaking the language of Shakespeare. The English, not Shakespeare, but of the dialect at that time,
right.
Because they had come with that, they had settled in those mountains, and that's how they talked. In the 1970s, in America, people were going in and recording and charting all of this.
Yeah, these things happen. They happen also in Russia, in Siberia. People were found.
If you live 20 years here, you only speak German and here and now. It's strange.
Yeah. So this cognition of the particular articulation which is in the system of language is Varnaspota, yes? Padaspota maintains that the finished word, being a unique entity, conveys the meaning. And the division into the morphological components such as suffixes, stems, etc. does not occur when the speaker or the hearer perceives it as meaningful. So we are not hearing ghata, ena, ghatena. We are hearing one particular movement, ghatena. And it's very true because the accent, morphological accent in the word is only one, as usual, unless these are composed words. Like brihaspati, there are two accents, so satisfaction, two seemingly accents, but usually there is only one accent in the word with suffixes, prefixes, and endings, meaning that we are cognizing it as one, without divisions. Yes? So the word is cognized in synthetic language together, not separate from those elements, yes, as a one entity. This theory claims that the text can be described by listening to the words and their meaning, as well as by perceiving the relation between them in the syntactic structure of a sentence. It is by listening to the meaning of every word and linking it with another word that the meaning of the sentence can be understood. But since the meaning of the sentence is the last to be grasped, then the Padaspota theory is found insufficient in the description of perception of meaning and leads to the next level of synthesis, Vakyaspota. Now, Vakyaspota maintains the recognition in the sentence that the sentence is a unique entity which conveys the meaning. And that's what Bhartrihari thinks. He says neither Pada nor Varnaspota are sufficient, though they are elements, but the text as such, that means sentence. The sentence or a text itself is a unit of meaning. Vakyaspota, however, does not claim that the constituents of the sentence do not have any meaning. The main point is of this theory is that the word should be always seen and understood in its context. The words have their meaning only when they form a part of a sentence. Now, it's a quite interesting vision, because if you take all those intonations which we have in the sentence, they are those units, meaningful units. When you have intonation of a questioning sentence, or you have intonation of affirmative sentence, and so on and so forth. And they are quite different for different people. That's what I cannot up to now handle. And we were taught in the school those intonations. It was quite well taught, but one thing is to be taught, another is to use it. Yes. If you hear proper English, aren't we? You can imagine that it is possible, but you can't say it yourself. And you just listen to how Shraddhavan speaks. And sometimes it is amazing to hear that beautiful, prosodics of her speech. So Vakyaspota, Akhanda Padaspota. Now Akhanda means undivided. Maintains that the word is perceived as undivided single meaning bearing unit. It is not perceived by its parts, suffixes, stems, but a single and undivided meaningful unit, entity. Akhanda Vakyaspota states, also very interesting, that it is insufficient to perceive the separate word, for in ordinary communications the sentence as the whole is perceived as meaningful and not a separate word in the sentence. Bhartrihari thinks that such division of a sentence into words and stems, etc., does not exist in the ordinary perception of speech, and he's right. We were doing this exercise here when I was introducing to you one part and didn't finish the last one, and it was growing, 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 and the meaning was not there until we heard that predicate, and once predicate is spoken, sentence is finished, completed, and we are satisfied, and spota takes place, disclosure of meaning. In common use of speech production, the meaning is taken as a whole, including the context. It is only when the utterance is completed, then the speaker can dwell on it and analyze it in its parts, as words, stems, and so on. So it's kind of reversed position view. But not during the speech. During the speech, nobody follows those stems and those words. Nobody listens to them. We are listening to the drive, to the meaning, what is implied or what is intended. And if he is able to grasp the parts of speech, such as syllables, he will lose the meaning of it all. Now, if we concentrate in this flow of speech to how I speak and pronounce those syllables or those words, we will not hear what I am saying. It's a strange thing. It's a kind of a disability of consciousness to be following the bits, the parts, and also to follow the whole at the same time. I think it's a higher ability of the mind.
Maybe it's more than the outer consciousness, but when you say we have to wait until the predication is come, stuff, but then we can put everything together. That means it was recorded before also this world.
Yes, the deeper consciousness has that ability, but our ordinary consciousness, and if you try, you will see for yourself that it is very true. Just try to listen to me word by word and analyze those words, what you would hear, what I'm trying to say. So the drive disappears, the intention steps back. According to this theory, the Varna and Padaspoda describe language in its functions, but not in its use. So the language is not used by words and morphemes, phonemes. Vakya spota and jati spota, oh sorry, vyakti spota and jati spota. There's an interesting view on this. To answer the question whether spota is particular or universal, there are two different theories called vyakti spota vada and jati spota vada. So the jati spota vada theory maintains the non-difference in the varied individual elements is generic, while Vyaktisphotavada says that difference is associative. I have to explain this. Jatisphotavada, the meaning-bearing word, is the class. For example, gotva, cowness. We see the cow and perceive the cow because of cowness behind it. This is jatispotavada. We do not perceive it otherwise. We do not see something with horns and then think, this is in association with the cow, that's how we relate it. That's what jatispotavada says, while vyaktispotavada says, no, it's not like that. We see something with the horns, and then we associate it with the class. Do you get the difference?
Could be both.
Could be both. Why not?
I am
very happy to hear this, because I think it is both. And it can't be otherwise. No, it's fine. So, it is associative and it is generic. At the same time,
it did.
Means that it is coming from gender, so some generated meaning like cowness.
So then it should be generic.
Generic, yes.
That's
well, yes. So it is generated from the class towards the individual. It's not perceived from individual in association with the class.
We discussed this in the evolution class. Yes. Tendency to eliminate contingencies and to perceive that which is general. It's not a conscious reference to the general, but even in the behavior of animals, you see that the particular contingencies
yes.
aren't important. It's the general pattern which is what is really perceived.
Yeah. There are interesting... Yes, please.
I want to tell myself this analogous mythical theory about language or concepts. Realists and nominalists were fighting over how to read the gospel texts and how angels can be perceived or with meaning. That means that angels from the category, like here with a gender or generic yeah. name of a group.
Jati.
Or either it's name only. Name, unique, you can say, that there's nothing behind name.
Yeah.
This is a complicated story, but maybe parallel with this.
Yeah, is yes, yeah. Well, it's an approach of consciousness to these two movements which are both there. And whether you start from there or you drop that and start from here, it will lead you to the same thing, but from both different ends. One example was interesting for this course of Rod. I saw the movie on YouTube, which was about a leopard attacking the monkey and hitting the monkey and killing the monkey for the food. But in the moment of killing the monkey, monkey brought to birth a child. Yes, it is all on the video. You can see it. Killed the monkey and it just got the child in the moment when it died. So the leopard was so misplaced in the context. It didn't touch the monkey, the big mummy monkey, it dropped it off altogether. It took the child as his own child and started to feed it, to teach it, to and it was such a drama. You have to see what they were doing together, because they're so different in their structures. But there was a misplacement of the perception. Another frame entered. Another generic type dominated in the moment, because it's very unusual to have it in that moment of time. It's nearly impossible to imagine that such thing will happen. So it happened and it was documented. I have this small movie. You can see it. It's really amazing to see what leopard was trying to do with that kid. And that monkey was no more touched as a food. It was no more important. And leopard was without food for a long time, trying to make monkey do things and feed, and also protecting it in the night, trying to put it high on the tree, and monkey is opposite to it. So it's all, it was a drama. It exhausted itself. So this generic type is not only within the individual, it's somewhere else dominating individuals and can enter any time into your life. So for Jatispothavada, the meaning-bearing word is a class, like Gotva Kaunas, which is revealed by the individual instances. The individuals are not meaning bearers. They are representatives of particular form, which is behind them. They are prototypes of some prototype, rather. There was one more distinction important to mention here, which is formulated, which formulated the two different approaches to the understanding of Sphota. It is Abhihita Anvayavada, and you see opposite to this, Anvitabhidhanavada. Abhidhana, Anvitabhidhana. So Abhihita Anvayavada, stated first by the words and followed then in the sentence. Theory maintains that the words and grammatical units have their own meaning, and by joining together through their syntactic relations, they build up the meaning of the sentence. And this other, Anvitabhidhana Vada, literally means following after the statement. I'm just giving in the brackets the literal meaning. Anvita Anuita is Abhidhana, following that which was stated. Theory, on the contrary, affirms that the meaning of the word can be understood only in the context of the sentence. So once you hear the sentence, you can figure out what were the words. It's quite a... So, I think here, in the same way as Jati and Vyakti, that both are present at the same time. So you see such rich context in which we can observe this Sphota theory. All these theories of Sphota, with many other variations and commentaries, make a rich layout for the linguistic studies of meaning in the terms of structural semantics. I think it's only about syntax and structural semantics. It is not reaching farther, because there is no etymology, there is no etymological meaning of the word. So it's all kept within the restraint of syntax or structural semantics.
Actually, I disagree with the second
yes?
theory.
Why? If
because what we get at the end of the statement is the meaning of the whole we are no longer concerned with the meaning of the words when we get the meaning of the whole idea. But as we hear the words building up, we are already putting in place all of the relationships which are necessary to perceive the meaning at the end. So the words or phrases are actually carrying us to the conclusion which was intended at the beginning.
So you are abhihita anvaya vada. Okay.
I also intend more towards this, I must say, in the beginnings. But even when you said before, what about predicating this kind of things in syntax, then of course I also
think. The good example of this, of course it is so, if we are really listening to the words of the in such environment where we are learning something or we are listening particularly for the speaker to build up his thought or to give us some information, yes. But if you go to some common where you are on bazaar somewhere selling, buying things, things are happening in the context, in the wider context, then I think that this other theory also has its place in an interesting way. People are not really even distinguishing what they are saying. I was trying to get some knowledge, linguistic knowledge, from Koreans, from people who have nothing to do with linguistics, that they would teach me. And I couldn't get from them a thing. They were not distinguishing at all anything. For them, these were complete, meaningful sentences. And for me to get out of it where was a noun and predicate and what was subject, I couldn't get from them because they were not trained. They are not thinking those terms. So in a way, of course, it is there. But it can be also that the meaning appears and the words are distinguished when the meaning is clear. Then they step out or they are... How do you call that? They have become sharp in their meaning, because in the flow of that, until it is known, it's not yet perceived. Once it is perceived, they step out from their shadow. They are there in the shadow, yes? But I'm sure that both have something to offer. It's not only one way. Because if it would be only one way, we would be all grammatists and linguists.
And how is it that, for example, when we speak very fast, and I notice it sometimes, I feel it is totally not conscious, and I talk to somebody, and they want to say quickly something, but the person is going, they want to finish, and they're hurrying. And actually, I feel I'm no more using words, I feel I'm just flashing something on that person.
Right.
And then we understand it. What is that? I feel all the real expression of words is totally...
Well, there is something called recursion. Mm-hmm. Recursion means that you repeat, you reverse and alter the structure, but you're using the same relationship. So this allows you to define the use that you're making of the word. In that case, you refer back to the word in different statements, but still the phrases are being used with the meaning in mind, and so the recursion is an after the fact kind of reference to repeated meanings.
Yes, that's why both.
Yes.
And it's quite interesting that both, yeah. And because if only one, we would be very clear, logically it's clear. I also agree with you with the first one.
It's called redundance. Redundance.
Mm.
The condition of staying by the work.
Mm. But if we have both, then it becomes very complex and beautiful. So then it becomes deeper, we can reach deeper than simply following all the time. If I didn't hear that word which you said there, I can't figure out. No, I can reconstruct. Because I have some other flashback from the whole to the particular, from the class to, from the jati to the vyakti. I have both flashes.
It gives us a flexibility and also a richness, and we can put consciousness in that moment and decide mm-hmm. where we want to move, in which aspect we want to emphasize.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And sometimes you have to stop and emphasize the word and make it meaningful, outstanding. Then you do something else. Well, we even don't register this. We register the meaning. But if we observe what is happening by how we emphasize words or parts of the sentence and meanings, it's a very, very flexible, how to say, an interesting exercise for the consciousness. So this is the whole thing, the whole presentation of all these major eight, as you see them here, approaches to the disclosure of meaning, how it happens in the moment of production of speech, speech production. So,
but it still doesn't tell us how the words have a meaning.
Yes, it doesn't tell us because the theory of etymology is not seen in this particular view. It was lost in the Vedic times, and from that time on there is nothing. Word is only a token of some structure, which is to make structure alive, and through structure we will understand the meaning. That's how we speak. We speak with structures. We are not speaking with words. We are drawing pictures to each other by words. And we are seeing those pictures. We are not speaking. Well, consciously not. Of course, some people do that also. And the word they bring is a texture of the sound and articulate through the sound the meaning. But it is very rare.
Daniel, I worked here 20 years in a radio station and we did the plays, radio plays, with the actors from the theater. And the quality was in the radio station is the actor must be able to transform through the sounds of a picture of the meaning. So not just a mental or so, it must be carried by the whole attitude and energy.
It's very wonderful you say it, because it's exactly what actors do and all those poets do. They put something more into the word, into that sound, to carry it. It's not just the structure.
But not every actor was good for the radio play.
Oh, for sure.
Because to carry you with the voice, the meaning and the full picture.
In the Soviet Union we had such wonderful radio. I was, you know, I was missing my school even. It was so good to listen to those stories. You can see everything. They were making it so well.
And
the pictures of them.
Also, I was here in West Berlin in this time when the wall was falling down, and from the former Communist Party, the actors came, they had been much better than the rest of them. The training was so good here.
Yeah. So, if you have some questions or something to say, yeah.
Since we have a little time, I was thinking if you could provide some examples of number 6, 7, and 8.
Yes.
Just to have clarity of what it might be. Varna and Jati, Pada and Jati.
Yes. All these jatis. Jatis are, they are generic. That means there are types, and it's quite interesting. Varna jati sphota, one can understand that it is proper sphota because there are universal sounds. Yes, these universal sounds sound different, as in this My Fair Lady, the same, Spain, rain and spine, rhine, and God knows what. But they are articulating the same universal sound differently, and these are individual samples of that jati sphota. So it's quite clear. Pada jati sphota is more difficult. That means that there are all these words like ghatena, ghatataha, ghatasya, ghateshu. They are existing as such. They are not produced.
So the idealist view.
Kind of.
Eternally suspended
us. Right. So ghateshu is a jati. It's not a made word. It's not ghata is jati, but ghateshu is every possible form in language will be there as universal. So there are many universal forms.
So they're trying to decide what is the origin
right
of the universal.
Right. So jati is always looking what is universal in that. Whether it is word, and they say, yes, word is universal. No, not the word. The varna, the phoneme is universal.
Type. This color is going on still because there are, even in any language, there are words designated and the world is the same. No. Society built language. Well, there are idealists who say there is a God or creator who built this unity and he fixed it in language also. So this thing is never solved, this whole dilemma.
Yeah, who is what is the first
element? Can also be celebrated with Burberry here also. Could it also be because there is a common Burberry, and that's why you would hear also these words as a whole, even with the different endings, that is really based on Burberry, not on something which.
But if I relate all these ghateshu into the reality in which there are pots and there can be things in pots, then it seems it's kind of universal. Because this meaning is there all the time. So all those representatives, all those vibhaktis, yes, of the pot, in the pot, from the pot, in the pots, in the two pots, in the many pots, for the pots, by the pots, they are all universals.
But not from a nominalist standpoint.
Yeah, of course, not nominalist.
None of them are universal.
Materialist or
yes.
Each thing is what it is in itself.
Yeah, well, here we have both. We have jati, sportavada, and we have vyakti, sportavada, for all of them, where there will be associative. So we have something which is individual, which is as such here, and then by association with others we make that connection, rather than we derive it from the jati. So vakya jati sporta is the most difficult one, that to understand that every sentence possible is universal. But if you look deeper into it, you will find only few possible structures, as Chomsky says. There are few fundamental structures, few sentences which we always speak all the time. So there can be some generic part in it.
So I'm reminded of a statement in Savitri when Sri Aurobindo was describing Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha lays down the law, which is a certain finite number of relationships in the cosmos. And within that structure, Prakriti is the energy that produces an infinite variety of combinations within and cannot violate the law, even though there is no limit to the possible. There's absolute freedom on the one hand, and on the other hand, there is absolute structure.
To calculate incalculable, it's exactly that. Because all those relations, truly speaking, if we would have that mind, we would see them all, and there will be a time where we will see them all, possible relations of Prakriti to Purusha within that structure, and they will be all Vakya Jati's portal. So, in a way, there is a part of truth in all of these approaches. So you see, why I'm putting all of them together, because the complexity of recognition of meaning is so profound in the structure. So it doesn't appear from anything in particular and general, but through the whole process of utterance, from starting from the articulation of varnas, making them applied to the morphology, making suffixes, stems, building up the word in this kind of from bottom to top approach, and then formulating words, linking them with sentences, building the sentence and linking them into the wider context, it's from bottom to top. But if we see from top to bottom, we will have another approach, yes? Where the the expression of meaning has is taking place as pashyanti, flashing, and then it looks for the dress of language to dress it in, and it dresses it in and gives us all these varieties. Words, what is happening when we are speaking? We are waiting for words. Did you notice that? I always say to myself, I'm waiting for a word to come, and it doesn't come, that word. So some other word comes. So it is channeling me through my way of formulating that pashyanti. So that pashyanti to be formulated is channeling me as if Prakriti is finding the varieties of possibilities to express something there of that Purusha. And you are not sure where you will end. You prepare your speech and then you deviate from it because it feels like. So there is a natural tendency to wait for that word to come and to dress this flash of intuition in a new way. And it doesn't want to be dressed all the time in the same way. And sometimes those, you know, intuitions which were well expressed cannot be repeated. Because if you repeat them, they will sound dull, because in that moment of time, another word is to come. Other sound is to manifest, truer to your being. So there is a very complex and beautiful picture of this disclosure of meaning. So it is always actual in the moment of utterance. It is not fixed in some particular structure, though it is using structure. Until you can't change it anymore, you see, unless you just drop it all together. Yes, it's like this. Okay, so here we are.
What's nicely on it is also that it shows the multiplicity of creation and this vastness, the daily language also, which we are meeting more and more this age, on all levels, and this uniqueness from every.
Yes, of course, it is the same happening not only within the language field, but any other field. You can see the same meaning is what is. This is the play of consciousness. How meaning is cognized? What does it mean, cognized? The consciousness is to recognize the meaningful movement of Prakriti. Yes? So it's a quite of and how it does it, yes? It does it with elements, it does it from particular to the general and from general to particular. There are two movements of consciousness simultaneously maintained. No, there is no meaning in this anymore. What is wrong and what is right?
I have no meaning where I have been such in the
world. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Very nice. So we end with a minute of silence. It's quite strong in the spiritual sense also. Though it is a linguistic theory, you can feel that the presence is growing in spite of it. And Bhartrihari considers this way is the way to liberation. If we know how the word works, if we could see it.
It's the Madhyamic path.
Yes.
was just thinking about this category, like what you're doing, some beautiful shots, is this prachana and ashrana. It's a paradigm of transcendental consciousness.
Also, yes. And we could look into that if you want to, in regards with Pashyanti and all the levels, because I discovered that these four major faculties of consciousness, Samjnana, Ajnana, Prajnana, Vijnana, are corresponding to those, somehow it's a unique thing. I just saw it once and I just typed in. It was at the end of all those researches. But yes, that Buddhistic part also would be interesting to look, because there is something which I know very little of, but Buddhists have a profound philosophy in that regard, yeah? If you are referring to it, yes? Mm. And also Jainists, they were dealing with this issue quite intensely in their own way. So, next time we will take the structure of the noun and the verb. We will take these two categories and see how they are dealt with in Sanskrit language.
It's also a good introduction to the evolutionary idea of which, whether structure or form is the ultimate determinant. In language as well as in philosophy and evolutionary theory, the debate is always between structure and form. And actually neither one of them is ultimate. There's a third level that is the synthesis of the two. Which is the function.